tu sahanao bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavaditamastama vidvishavahai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 19. The gopis continued, O sinless Yashoda, your darling child, the son of Maharaj Nanda, has festively enhanced his attire with a jasmine garland, and he is now playing along the Jamuna in the company of his cows and cowherd boys, amusing his dear companions. The gentle breeze honors him with its soothing fragrance of sandalwood, while the various Upadevas, standing on all sides like Pani Gris... Pani? Yeah. Panegyrists offer their music, singing, and gifts of tribute. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. When the gopis who had assembled at Yashoda's house saw that she was disturbed because Krishna was late in coming, they pacified her by giving her reasons for his lateness. O sinless one, you have not committed any sins previously or in this life, by which danger would come to your son. So why do you uselessly worry about danger from demons if he is a little late? Right, because it's due to sin that different things will happen, like that things don't go well in the life and all that. And so then, especially for parents, that losing children, that's considered a big calamity, because it's supposed to be the natural order of things is the parents die before the children. That's just the normal order. So if the children die before the parents, that just means that there is an element of sin that's there, that the parents would have to experience that. Of course, then the children are there, that they would die at an early age, so that's their karma. So then you just put the two together. Mm-hmm. Right? It means these children are supposed to die early, and these parents are supposed to experience that. Mm-hmm. So they're pointing out that Mother Yashoda has never done anything in last life or this life that would warrant that, so therefore she shouldn't be worried. She shouldn't be in anxiety. The gopis continue. Out of great affection for the cows of Braja, Krishna became the lifter of Govardhan Hill. At the end of the day, having rounded up all his own cows, he plays a song on his flutes, while exalted demigods standing along the path worship his lotus feet, and the cowherd boys accompanying him chant his glories. His garland is powdered by the dust raised by the calf's hooves, and his beauty enhanced by his fatigue, creates an ecstatic festival for everyone's eyes. Eager to fulfill his friend's desires, Krishna is the moon arisen from the womb of Mother Yashoda. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Seeing that my son has not come back at the end of twilight, I will now kill myself. Fearing this response from Mother Yashoda, the gopis then gave reasons why Krishna would come quickly in order to calm her. Being affectionate to the bulls tied up in Braja, remembering the suffering in separation from him, He has ignored the worship of the Upadevas and is coming quickly. One cannot say that for a cowherd boy, the skillful singing of the lowly Gandharvas is more attractive than giving grass to the cows or tickling. Tickling. I don't think you tickly. Tickling. Huh?
Tickling.
Tickling, yeah. Tickling. It's more attractive than giving grass to the cows or seeing, tickling, or touching your bodies. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill to protect the cows. From this we see as great affection for the cows. Although the Gandharvas may have heaps of qualities, Krishna has not a morsel of affection for them, right? So the demigods are there showing their prowess, but he lifted Govardhan Hill to protect the cows. So the whole point is, even if the whole host of demigods is there offering prayers, it's going to be more important to him to see that the cows get back after their sheds, you know, get, you know, taken care of and fed and everything nicely. So, yeah. So Mother Jashoda, therefore, doesn't have to worry. Mother Jashoda replies, "If that is so, then he would have been here immediately." Thus the gopis give the reason for his lateness. Brahma, Shiva, and others are now offering their respects along the path. The devatas, coming from their houses and situating themselves close by in the sky, watch Krishna all day in bliss. When Krishna returns in the evening, they also return to their houses, but not before descending from the sky to earth to offer their respects to his lotus feet to obtain his mercy. What can they do in this circumstance? This request from the devatas is a greater cause of his lateness. But do you not see the good fortune in the devatas offering the respects to your son's feet? Why do you lament? Jashoda with choked voice said, "O young women, please go quickly to the roof and see how far my son is away." Going to the roof, the gopis then spoke to her in loud voices. Stopping all the cows in one place with the sound of his flute to fill the desires of well-wishers, Krishna is now coming. He is brilliant in his fatigue, a festival for the eyes, with garland covered by dust raised by the cow's hooves. Whatever was said for the benefit of Mother Jashoda was also for the benefit of other gopis, to whom they threw indirect glances. So just Mother Jashoda, you know, because she's worried in the morning when Krishna goes out that he'll be safe. Because his point is, as he's young, he can stay at home. Nanda Baba can take the cows out. Right? Krishna doesn't need to take the cows out. But then, you know, Krishna gives the point that, but they being cowherds, then it's his duty, it's his occupation, and one always must perform his occupation. Right, because if you didn't always perform your occupation, Krishna would not be able to go out with the cows. So because of that principle, then he is going out. So then now she's worried because the time has come in the evening for him to come back, but he hasn't come back. So then, you know, that anxiety is going on. Then we see here then how nicely then they're trying to, relieve her anxiety. And so because the point is when Krishna comes back, they will also be relieved, right? Because then they get to see Krishna. So here it's for both. It's being presented only from the aspect of the benefit of Mother Jashoda. But there's also the aspect which is hidden of the benefit of the gopis, because they want to see him also. But you know, of course they're not going to bring that out, but, you know, like that. Also we see, yes. Yeah, so this is a standard thing in the evenings. The demigods, like they said, come down and offer their respects and that on the ground before leaving. Because they've been watching Krishna all day, so they don't just from there go. They come down, offer their respects, and go. That appears to be, you know, a standard activity that goes on. And we also see that by this time, then Mother Jashoda and the others, they're adjusted with that. All the demigods, all these things go on in this way. Well, you see, earlier than that was a problem for them. It was always bewildering, but it never affected their affection for Krishna. But now we see by this time, then they're not even worried about it at all. It's just part of the standard thing. That's what, you know, your son has to do all this, right? You know, it's just like how you say you take care of guests. So if some guest comes, then you always reciprocate in that, so the demigods have come, so of course he has to interact and reciprocate like that. Yes? So you just see the mood has come to the point where that's not a problem anymore. You know, especially now, you know, Nanda Baba being taken down to Varuna's place and then seeing there, and then Vidhihara like that. So because before is the not the Ashwini Kumaras, no. Who are they? The Arjuna, yeah. Nalakuvera and Manigrida. Right, so then they didn't see that. The small boys did, and then they just speak what they see because they don't adjust it. They haven't learned all that kind of, you know, various etiquettes yet. So then they're bewildered. But by this time now, they're seeing the Vidyadharas. They're seeing Varuna. You know, Nanda Baba is seeing how they deal with Krishna like that. So by this time, it's just they have affection for him, so it doesn't matter the position. So that's the standard position of the Brajmanis, is that he's God, and that's not a problem for them, but it doesn't actually have any... it doesn't add anything or subtract anything to their love for Krishna. It's not because now he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they like him more. No, it doesn't matter. Right? That's the whole thing. They like him as a person. So this is the fullest extent of when Krishna says he is in everything, but everything is not in me. Right? Because he's extended into everything, and everything is him, but at the same time, he is a person, is not all those things. So all these other aspects, that he's the Lord of Vaikuntha, that he's the Lord of the demigods, and that actually doesn't really matter. It's about his relationship with the Brajabasis. Like they say here, he'd rather take care of the cows because of their loving affection than the demigods, which don't have that same affection. Right? Because the demigods are doing these things because they're demigods. Make sense? So there is that respect, that affection. They are devotional, but it's not the same as the cows, because control is based on affection. So the affection of the cows for Krishna is much greater than the demigods for Krishna. Therefore, he's controlled by their love and not by the demigods. Right? If an individual demigod has great devotion, yes, that's there, but it's not because he's a demigod that's why it's going on. You know, does that make sense? Or that because they're a cow. That you do take care of properly, but that affection is because the cows have so much affection for Krishna. Okay. The gopis continued. As Krishna respectfully greets all his well-wishing friends, his eyes roll slightly as if from intoxication. Because we see he's come back, he's fatigued from the day and everything like that. So there, for them, that's a beauty, because one is they're seeing emotions. Right? Because men don't like to show those kind of emotions, that they're feeling tired or this or that or sick or anything that's not, you know, whatever it is. But for the ladies, then they appreciate that, because then one, that means, you know, just that personal aspect, and two, it just means then there's things to do. Right? If he's fatigued, then Mother Yashoda giving him a bath and feeding him and you know, sitting him down and all that has more, you know, has significance. Otherwise, if he's, how you say, you know, on the top of his game and everything like that, then he's not going to, it won't match. So it's a natural, you come back, you know, you arrange your bath, change your clothes, have your dinner, some, you know, relaxation, all these kinds of things. Yeah? He wears a flower garland, and the beauty of his soft cheeks is accentuated by the brilliance of his golden earrings and the whiteness of his face, which has the color of a badara berry. With his cheerful face resembling the moon, right, because the moon is very pleasing, right? Lord of the night, the Lord of the Yadus moves with the grace of a regal elephant. Thus he returns in the evening, delivering the cows of Braja from the heat of the day. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though he has arrived at the edge of the town, hear why he is slightly delayed, right? So that's what the gopis say. His eyes are mad, rolling about due to the bliss from seeing his father and other loved ones, or due to love generated from seeing the gopis, right? So it's just... The first meaning is for those in Vatsalya Rasa, and the second meaning is for those in Madhurya Rasa. This will be understood later. He is giving some acknowledgement of respect by nodding his head, since, though a prince, he was still young and not obliged to strictly follow the etiquette according to scriptural rules. He gives respect to those dear ones, Swa Sudi Dham, offering blessings, the priests, elders, brothers, servants, and Kambula makers. This is the reason for his delay, because coming back, then they're all there, so he's respecting them all and interacting, because they've all come out to see him. But Mother Jashoda, she stays at the house, and so she's expecting him to come into the house, because she's made all arrangements. See, when he's going out, she'll go out, because there's no more arrangements at the house. There's nothing more happening there. So then she'll go out, you know, to some distance with him. You know, at some point it becomes a little too far. So then she comes back with all the gopis. Then the gopis, they go out with her because she's going out to be around her, to support her. But in actuality, they also want to go out. But it's just a matter of, you know, the two rasas. Means they can function, means the situations they can interact together. But actually the expression of rasa, that those two don't match. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sva Suridam also indicates his beloved gopis. Krishna gives respect to those gopis worshipping him with smiling blue lotus glances from the rooftops by his own glances, unseen by others. Right? So these glances others won't see, because as soon as they see, then everybody looks what's there. Because you can see the mood, and then you see where that mood's directed, and then when you look and you see that that mood is some young gopis on the roof, then people tend to put two and two together and get seven, right? So, you know, all that's happening. So they're not seen. Because that's the other point. If it's just so obvious and all that, it doesn't have that parakia aspect, right? Because the swakia, then it's obvious. He's coming and this and that. But you won't even see that manifest out in public, because, you know, he is coming home, so they'll just wait at the home. Does that make sense? But for the gopis, there is no coming to their house. They can go to Mother Jashoda's house, but then they're going to have to be more careful. They can't just look and stuff. But if they're on their own roofs and they're looking, they just happen to be out in the evening. You know, it's an auspicious time, it's a nice time. At the time of Goduli, people go out, look around, it's a pleasant time just before it gets dark, you know, so then no one can complain. So, yeah. Okay. Krishna gives respect to those gopis worshipping him with smiling blue lotus glances from the rooftops by his own glances unseen by others, signifying that he would fulfill their desires. Because then also you have to see is that you fulfill the desires, but then you also have to make the arrangements, you know, for that situation. So whether those are arranged at that time or at Nanda Bhavan or other things, then you know, but this is all going on, so they feel confident. Otherwise they're going to be worried. Their separation, you know, is Krishna's Krishna care and all that. Then by this interaction, then they know he does. His face was slightly flushed like a ripe badari fruit due to thirst, hunger, and fatigue from wandering in the forest. Or his face was flushed due to experiencing prolonged separation from his dear gopis. Right? So both of these are going on, but as it mentions, that these are how it's appreciated by the two rasas, the same phenomena. Right? His tender cheeks were decorated with a glint from his gold earrings. Krishna is addressed as the Lord of the Yadus, which here means Lord of the Gopas. The reason has been explained previously. See 10.5.20. So 5 means that's when Nanda Baba is meeting with Vasudeva, or that's 4. But the point is that they're related. Nanda Baba is from that, there's a connection there with the Kshatriyas. But I'm not sure how it is. He's taken up the duties of a Vaishya. So that aspect is there. So he's actually connected. When Vasudeva and him are, you know, they're friends. Yeah. They said the same?
Same father.
Same father, different mothers. Okay. So then that's the point, is that here you can say from the Yadus, then you could say, okay, that means the Mathura Vasis at this point. But actually, it means the gopas, right? because they're also, Nanda Baba in his line, they're also connected in the same way. Does that make sense? He walked slowly like the king of the elephants, with happy face. He approached near, cooling the eyes of the inhabitants of Braja, which had become hot due to separation during the day. Right, so everyone, the cows have been out in the sun, they're coming back, he's been out, you know, like that, and feeling the fatigue in that for the parents, or because of the separation, their feeling of separation, those who were in Vrindavan, when he comes, so then by coming, then his face, which is compared like the moon, then is cooling, like, you know, the heat of the day when the moon comes up, then it's very, very cooling, and very, very nice. I'm not sure, I think on Sunday or Monday is Purnima. Should be, yeah. But this is supposed to be, the moon's very, very close, so it'll be very big.
Monday's
so it's one of those, huh?
Monday's Purnima. Monday's
Purnima. It's one of those super moons. You know, they look more big. Like some, like on Gaur Purnima, many times it does. It's bigger or it's redder, like that. So it's one of those. So if you find that everybody's a bit more crazy than normal, then you know why. For those affected by the moon. Yeah, just so you don't get worried. Right? So in other words, this whole thing of bringing in the cows, they're hot, they're coming back from there, they're hot. The Brajabasis from not seeing Krishna, now the moon rising of Krishna, then they become very satisfied. So the whole thing, it becomes very, very nice. Everybody's very happy. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, thus during the daytime, the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna. And those ladies' minds and hearts absorbed in him were filled with great festivity. Oh, okay. Oh, so that's the end of the 12 pairs. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, this is the conclusion, O King. He pacifies Parikit, overcome with prema on hearing the gopi's song. Oh, so this is Gopi Gita. Okay. During the days filled with separation, they became filled with bliss because they were absorbed in Krishna, whose nature was the highest bliss. Right? Because if you're absorbed in Krishna, and Krishna is bliss for personified, then naturally one will be very blissful. It'll have the flavor of separation, but the happiness that's there, it's the greatest. Though they suffered separation, Avam, they also experienced bliss by singing about him. In this way, using songs, they experienced bliss. They desired consciousness of him alone by singing. By absorbing their consciousness and minds in him, they experienced the highest perfection, Mahodayaha, because he made his appearance when they sang in this way. Right? Because in the mood that they're absorbed in Krishna, so that means Krishna's also then present with them. Right? So that's the point, is that whoever's absorbed in thinking of Krishna, Krishna's always with them. Right? There's not going to be a problem for that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, such descriptions of Krishna's transcendental pastimes and activities were remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. They gave us some idea of how attractive Krishna is, not only to human beings, but to all animate and inanimate objects. In Vrindavan, everyone and everything is attracted to Krishna, including the trees, plants, the water, and animals, like the deer and cows. That is the perfect description of Krishna's all-attractiveness. The example of the gopis is very instructive to persons who are trying to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. One can very easily associate with Krishna simply by remembering his transcendental pastimes. Everyone has a tendency to love someone. That Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. Right? Because the nature of the living entity is to have relationship, to have that affection. But Krishna is the center of all those relationships. Right? So whatever is their position, Krishna is the center. Right? So we see that those who can socially deal directly with that, like Mother Jashoda and that, then it's obvious that their connection in Krishna is the center. then her relationship with all her friends and with Nanda Baba and everything is in connection to Krishna, right? So that maintains that flavor. And then we see with the young gopis, then they see that their family members and all that, the only reason that they have any attractive element at all is because of Krishna. So they see Krishna as the center of the relationship in their family. Right? And then they have that directness where they interact then with Krishna. Does it make sense? So whatever relationship is there, if Krishna is the center of it, then it becomes perfect. And if a relationship is there and Krishna is not the center of it, then it will take on that material difficulties and anxieties to that degree that Krishna is not involved. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns all 26 verses in this chapter to Bhagavat Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhuri Ma, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Conclusion. Feeling constant separation while engaged in the service of the Lord is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. When Krishna went to the forest with his cowherd friends and cows, the gopis did not physically take part, but their hearts went with him. And because their hearts went, they were able to enjoy his company through strong feelings of separation. To acquire this strong feeling of separation is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and his direct disciplic succession of Goswamis. When we are not in physical contact with Krishna, we can associate with him like the gopis through feelings of separation. Devotional service to Krishna in feelings of separation elevates the devotee to the highest perfectional level, to the level of the gopis. Right? So they're considered the topmost of the devotees, as Sanatana Goswami has pointed out. And so then by being always absorbed in remembering Krishna and doing everything for Krishna, even in this position of separation from Krishna, then that brings you to this position like the gopis. Right? So then when it's said that one should follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, so this is what is meant, is that one performs one's service in this mood of trying to do everything for Krishna, because Krishna is the center of all activities. And that then brings you to that standard where then one has that that understanding of one's actual relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? Because this is that first stage that must be there. Unless that is appreciated, then it's not. It's the other stages don't follow.
Right. So. When you have the prakata pastimes of Krishna.
When you have the which pastime?
Prakat.
Okay.
So the prakata pastimes of Krishna has like this aspect, you know, of Vipra Namba and Sambhog. But when it is all prakat lila is going on, then like, so what happens is that the devotees, the practicing devotees, are always in Vipra Namba. And therefore, even though.
The practicing devotees.
Like sadhakas.
Since when are the sadhakas involved in the prakat lila?
No, not prakata. Oh, prakata I'm speaking of.
But when are they involved in the
they're
prakat?
They're not involved. I'll just complete, you know. Like,
okay.
So what I mean to say is, when Krishna is unmanifest and his pastimes are unmanifest to us, then devotees experience separation. But even though only the dham is prakata, you know. Like we are able to see the dham, we are able to visit the dham, because of which, you know, the separation that devotees feel, that is mitigated. So is that the reason why that Krishna, when he leaves, he doesn't take the dham with him, you know, but only his associates and everything. When he leaves,
he doesn't take the dham with him. Is that why? So that devotees have that opportunity to be with the dham that's prakat, while everything else is aprakat. Okay, so then looking at this, so what's the difference between prakat and aprakat?
Prakat lila, it is everybody can see whether one is qualified or not.
Right.
And for aprakat, you know, it is going on, but we are not able to see. You know?
Okay, so if it's going on and we're not able to see, or it's going on and we're able to see, so what is the meaning of Krishna leaving? Because that means if he leaves, then the pastime's not happening. So what's the meaning of aprakat?
Invisible to the eyes.
Yes, but so, but the leaving part, does he leave? Does, I mean, do the Goswamis ever make the point that Krishna leaves Vrindavan?
He never leaves
Vrindavan. He never leaves. So that means the prakat and aprakat is just whether you can see it or not. It's going on.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
So it's the same place and same spiritual potency. Right?
Yeah.
So the dham is that place where the pastimes happen. Whether you can see them or not, that's another point. So it has nothing to do with the prakat and aprakat. It means this is where the pastimes are going on. Whether you can see them or not, that's another thing. So it has nothing to do with Krishna doesn't take the dham, and therefore the dham always remains prakat. The point is how many people understand or appreciate it's the dham. Like how prakat is it to all these wallahs going by on their funny little rickshaws with the, I say, shallow pump motors on it, taking goods around and expecting to get some money. Right?
They don't value it.
Everybody else is aprakat. Everybody else is
aprakat. Yeah, everyone else is aprakat. So. They're always in the aprakat path. So. Except when it comes to the money, that's prakat. Right? Okay. Does this make sense? So the point is the dham is always here. So it's not that when he goes, he takes it with him, because he never goes. He's always here.
Okay.
Right? And the point is, you know, we may appreciate it's the dham, but can we see, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is looking out from his house, you know, seeing the big temple, seeing all the devotees there, you know, thousands of devotees all with their veenas playing and chanting and dancing and all that going on.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know what I'm saying? So why would you make this distinction that we're seeing the dham in its fullness? Because it's also pointed out that there's a thin covering of proud and maya. It depends on how you see the dham. You appreciate, then it's thinner or not there. You don't appreciate, then it's thicker. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes?
Yes. Yes,
so we're good?
Yes.
We're good.
The point of appreciation, the dham, the devotees, it should come from the heart, the intelligence, and the mind. I mean, better if it comes from the heart. But if it doesn't...
You're leaving the body out in this one?
The body is a dead matter.
Yeah, but should the dead matter be like offering obeisances or...
That's kind of what you do when you know that you're supposed to do it. But my point was that even if we don't feel appreciation, or not so much appreciation, if we act on it, it's...
If we act on it means?
We offer obeisances.
Okay, means we act as according to the rules that you should, whether you appreciate or not.
But that's not real appreciation as such from the heart. I mean,
no, but it's still a sadhana. Why are you doing it? Because you appreciate that this is the dham. Whether you fully appreciate what the dham is, that's another thing, but it's out of appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the depth of realization may not be so much. Chapters 36, the slaying of Aristha, the bull demon. Pratigya. Unless one sees the Lord or his devotees with purified eyes, one cannot derive the actual benefit. So that's along the line of what we're all discussing. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 36th chapter describes how Kamsa, hearing from Narad Muni that Krishna killed Aristasura, imprisoned Devaki and Vasudeva, and ordered Akrura to go to Braja. Right, so things are getting out of hand now. Right? I guess Arista must have been one of his very major associates, and now with Arista being killed, then. The demon Arista wanted to kill Krishna and Balaram, and thus he assumed the form of a huge bull with sharp horns. Everyone in Krishna's cow herd village became terrified when Aristasura approached it. But the Lord pacified them, and when the bull demon charged him, he seized him by the horns and threw him about 6 yards. Though weakened, Arista still wanted to attack Krishna. Thus, dripping with sweat, he charged the Lord once again. This time Krishna grabbed his horns, threw him to the ground, and thrashed him like a pile of wet clothing. The demon vomited blood and gave up his life. Then Krishna and Rama, while being honored by the demigods and cowherd boys, returned to the village. A short time later, Narad Muni, the great sage among the demigods, came to see King Kamsa. He informed the king that Krishna and Balaram were not Nanda's sons, but rather Vasudev's. It was out of fear of Kamsa that Vasudev had put the two boys under Nanda's care. Furthermore, said Narad, Kamsa would meet his death at their hands. Right? Because before, it was just finesse so that these pastimes could go on nicely. But now is the time for the end of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan for him to go to Mathura. Right? Because then up through the Kishore age, then that's being spent in Vrindavan. Right? So then when that comes to that time, then he goes to the next age. Then, you know, when it would come to the Yovana age, then that's from Dwarka on, or the Mathura.
Right.
So that the pastime will move on.
Move on without him telling.
Why would Krishna go to Mathura? He's in Vrindavan, he's happy, he's satisfied. But these are the pastimes that are there, so therefore it's then arranged so that the pastime moves on. Because what's the idea? Should Kamsa stick around or not? We like Kamsa. He's a nice guy. So if Krishna's in Vrindavan, then does Kamsa, you know, go away? No. So it's only when Krishna comes to Mathura, then he will be, you know how you say, things will be adjusted appropriately. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore then, Narad Muni, by then saying all these things, then it's appreciated what's happening, and then it moves, the pastimes move forward.
It just seems funny that he interferes in that way.
No, but he doesn't interfere. It said it has to be introduced in some way. So Narad Muni, being the sage, so therefore he's always seen in a neutral state, therefore then he's the natural one to introduce things like that. Because of his neutral position, right? Because being a sage, being the aspect of being, how you say, you know, self atmarama, then they deal with everybody equally. So then even the big demons and all that, like Hiranyakashipu, he didn't in any way disrespect Narad Muni. He just knew his potency, so he didn't allow him to go into the inner part of the house to see Prahlad. You know, because Prahlad's already got a problem with this devotional service kind of stuff, right? You know, that this distraction from the appropriate demoniac attitude. So if Narad Muni goes there, then that will be intensified. So he can't go inside the house, because otherwise the sages can move anywhere. But at the same time, as if he comes to the court, he'll sit, he'll host him like you would anybody else. Does that make sense? So even though they know he's a devotee of Vishnu, but because of the neutral standing, then they know that he'll deal with all living entities equally. So that's why then he can come and say these things, while others wouldn't, because they're dealing on that platform where they have that particular sense of possession, so they're not going to, they wouldn't want to get involved in that. Does that make sense? It just wouldn't be appropriate. Right? So even like for Akrura, how is Akrura viewed by the Brajavasis? Not so good, right? So therefore, you know, those who have that, you know, have relationships above the Shanta Ras, then wouldn't be involved in that. But those in Shanta Ras, they can be involved in that, because Krishna's position is always perfect no matter what situation it is. For them, it's just another manifestation of the pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
make sense? Because you have to appreciate that different rasas will see in different ways. So we shouldn't be worried about Narad Muni. Yes, he fits in everywhere, so that's the whole point. You know, he pleases everyone, so you know, you'll see Narad Muni will be the perfect example of that equality, pleasing to everyone and like that. That aspect. Kamsa shook with fear and anger when he heard all this. And because also he's also so proud that if anybody else told him, he wouldn't believe it. But if Narad Muni says, it must be true. That's also going to be another point. And a great agitation began thinking of how to destroy Krishna and Balaram. He called for the demons Chanura and Mustika and instructed them to kill the two brothers in a wrestling match. Then he spoke to Akrura, who was expert in executing his duties. Taking Akrura by the hand, Kamsa persuaded him to go to Braja to bring the two boys to Mathura. Akrura agreed to carry out Kamsa's order and then returned home. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses 1 to 15, Krishna kills Aristasura. Verses 16 to 40, Narad Muni instigates Kamsa to send for Krishna and Balaram. Right? So if you want to get rid of Kamsa, then Krishna and Balaram are going to kill him, so therefore if you bring them where he is, then he'll get killed. So, that's it. Verses 1 to 15, Krishna kills Aristasura. Sukadeva Goswami said, the demon Arista then came to the cowherd village, appearing in the form of a bull with a large hump. He made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hooves. Footnote 1. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 1 to Bhagavad Arkamichimala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So that these are points are arranged, then, you know, for Krishna, this is then fun. So these are all, the Yoga Maya arranges all these things just to please Krishna. Right, so then all the demons come, then he interacts with the devotees. So him killing the demons and being involved is only because of the devotees. Otherwise, to get rid of this guy, he doesn't have to get involved. Right. Arista bellowed very harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns, every now and then passing a little stool and urine. Right? Because you'll see is that many times bulls, when they see like a small hill, like an embankment or some small like hill where the dirt is there, so it's up to the level where it's like at their head level, they a lot of times take great pleasure in going there and fighting with it. Right? They'll go there and with their horns and do a whole number with it. So then, here's the same thing. So you'll go, the embankments, all the different things like that have been man-made, he'll go there and fight with them. Right? If it's a natural thing, he won't. But if it's a man-made thing, then they will, somehow or another. I guess because the earth is bare or something. So. Like
sometimes, even on the grass, he'll also
do. Sometimes you see them too. Okay. So. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, in the evening when Krishna returned, as previously described, Arista arrived. Vishnu Purana describes this. Once, midway through the period of dusk, when Krishna was eager to perform the rasa dance, Aristasura madly entered the cowherd village, terrifying everyone. Right? Wrong time to come. Right? He's thinking about the rasa dance, and then this guy shows up. But any time is bad. But. A very similar description is given in Hari Vamsa. Every day the gopis pass the daylight hours in singing as pastimes. At the end of one evening, after finishing his dinner, he left his bedroom to go for the rasa dance and went beyond the village of Braja. Oh, so this is quite late. Because he has his dinner, there's the evening entertainment, and then he goes to bed. And then after that, when everyone else has gone to bed, then he goes out. Shukadeva Goswami continued, my dear king, clouds hovered about sharp-horned Arista's Sura's hump, mistaking it for a mountain. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror. Indeed, the strident reverberation of the roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they lost their fetuses in miscarriages. The domestic animals fled the pasture in fear, O king, and all the inhabitants rushed to Lord Govinda for shelter, crying, Krishna, Krishna. When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he called them, saying, don't be afraid. Then he called out to the bull demon as follows. So it's because they're afraid, then to reciprocate with them, then he kills the demon. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, he called the demon towards him, Upa Vayat, going far from Vraja, so that he would not cause disturbance in Vraja. Because like, if you're going to have a big fight thing, you don't want to have it right in the village, so you want to have it outside. Sri Krishna said, you fool, what do you think you're doing, you wicked rascal, frightening the cowherd community and their animals, when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, addressing the demon as most sinful one, asattama, right? So you have uttama, you have here's asattama, most sinful. Krishna suggests that no sin would be incurred by killing the bull, though normally cows and bulls should not be killed. Because he's come in this form of a bull, then, you know, as a demon he has to be killed, but because he's pointing out the sinful aspect, that's then why he can be killed. Because otherwise cows and bulls, then they're never killed because of that purity that they have. Sukadeva Goswami continued, having spoken these words, the infallible Lord Hari slapped his arms with his palms, further angering Arista with the loud sound. The Lord then casually threw his mighty serpentine arm over the shoulder of a friend and stood facing the demon. Right? So he's slapping the arms as part of a wrestling, how you say, it's a wrestling mudra to indicate that you're ready and you're strong and like that. I don't know, do you still see that in Indian wrestling?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, yeah, because they slap their arms and
tight.
And thighs like this, so they just show that they're strong, right? Because if you can slap yourself, it doesn't hurt. Because anyone else you slap like that, it hurts. So like that. So then the demon gets more angry, and then after doing that, then he just kind of leans his arm on one of his cowherd friends, right? Showing that it's Arista's being there is not a, you know, in any way causing any fear to Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Krishna has put his arm on the shoulder of his friend Sridhama, showing disrespect to the demon. His arm was like a snake because of its roundness and thickness. Krishna is called Achyuta, since he did not move from that spot. Harivamsa says, Tasmat stanam na vyachalat Krishno girir ivachalaha. Krishna did not move from the spot, being as immovable as a mountain. Vishnu Purana says, Nachala tata stanat abaj shashmita lilaya. He did not move from the spot and smiled with disrespect in a casual manner. In this situation, Krishna was very attractive. Adihi. So just all this is just to invoke this whole fighting element. Sugadev Goswami, yes.
Yeah, we have many references of Harivamsa, you know. So Harivamsa is a Purana, what?
Harivamsa is a Purana.
Yeah,
Harivamsa is a Purana. Anybody knows?
It's a continuation. It's like a part of Mahabharata.
Mm. It's a part of Mahabharata.
Mm-hmm.
So that's after Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Because Brihad Bhagavatamrita is, oh no, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a continuation of Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Okay, and Harivamsa is a continuation of Mahabharata.
So this is written by Vyasadeva. It is written by Vyasadeva, that means. Okay.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Is Harivamsa written by Vyasadeva?
Yeah.
Yes. So it's a... Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus provoked, Arista pawed the ground with one of his hooves, and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. Footnote 2. the Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 8 and 9 to Bhagavad Arkamichimal, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Right, so again, just a nice arrangement. It's like, it means how big would you have to be for clouds to hang around your tail, right? You know, so we're not talking about, you know, Los Angeles here and smog, you know, like that. That's going to be around your ankles. We're talking about, you know, regular clouds. So because they thought he's a mountain, therefore the clouds then gathered around. So the hump on his back, then they're gathered there, and then his raised tail, then they're gathering around the tail. So it means he's quite big. Pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes, Arista rushed towards him at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. The Supreme Lord Krishna seized Arista by the horns and threw him back 18 steps, just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Thus repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up, and, breathing hard and sweating all over his body, again charged him in a mindless rage. As Arista attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his foot. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth, and finally he yanked out one of the demon's horns and struck him with it until he lay prostrate. Footnote 3. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 12 to 13 to Bhagavad Arkamichimala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Kritva means he uprooted his horn. Vishnu Purana describes this, Utpatya Shringam Ekam Cha Tena Va Tarayat Tata. He uprooted one horn and beat the demon with it. Right? You know, so that's even more kind of insulting, right? So why is he taking this form of a bull and this and that, and coming and harassing, right? Bulls are supposed to be nice. So he's coming, his weapon is his horns, you know, and his great strength. And so then with that he's making trouble in Vrindavan. So then taking that same horn that he's making trouble with, then Krishna then chastises him with that horn. Harivamsa says, Shringam chasya punasavam utpatya yamadandavat tenaiva praharat vaktram cha mamara vrisho hataha. He uprooted his left horn and beat his head with it as if it were Yamaraja's staff, and the beaten bull then died. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Vomiting blood and profusely excreting stool and urine, kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about, Arista thus went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, his death is described. He actually bled and released urine and stool, bit by bit, in the fighting. This verse describes that condition. Sukadeva speaks in anger in saying that the demon went to the abode of Yama. However, actually, he attained liberation, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.34, footnote 4. All demoniac personalities like Palumba, Danuka, Baka, Keshi, Arista, Chanura, Mustika, Kuva, Layapida, elephant, Kamsa, Yavana, Narakasura, and Pandraka, great marshals like Salva, Dvivida monkey, and Balvala, Dantavakra, the seven bulls, Sambara, Vidurata, and Rukmi, as also great warriors like Kamboja, Matsya, Kuru, Shrishjaya, and Kekaya, would all fight vigorously, either with Lord Hari directly, or with him under his names of Baladev, Arjuna, Bhima, etc. and the demons being thus killed would attain either the impersonal Brahmajyoti or his personal abode in the Vaikuntha planets. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7, 34-35. Right, because of their being killed by Krishna, they're purified, so that will then situate them nicely in the Brahmajyoti. But now if there's an attraction for Krishna by the demon, then that will cause them going to Vaikuntha. So it's just like we see is that how attractive Krishna looked when he went out to kill Aristasura. Right? His smile, all these things. So that will attract the attention of Arista. So with that, then he may become absorbed in Krishna. That will take him to Vaikuntha.
Right. Why do they keep bringing out the point of the bowl passing stool and urine? Because my understanding is that's supposed to be auspicious.
Because they do that a lot when they're not happy. Or when they're just being themselves. So it shows here that that's there. So as soon as there's something that they're fearful, they immediately say, well, pass through in here. So it just means here that he was quite scared, right? Because he's a big, big demon. So many other demons have been killed, and Kamsa's not freaking out. But this demon's killed, now he's freaking out. So we can, you know, he must be very, you know, high ranking.
Yeah. Just a point, the size of the Aristasura demon and the Krishna, the contrast is huge.
Yes.
So, means we are not able to visualize the how the rasa will, big demon, this is going to mountain and small boy.
Yeah, but what are the end of the horns like? The bull has their horns. And the tip of the horns, what are they like?
Small point.
Yeah, so then Krishna can't grab that. Because that's what he does. He grabs it by the horns, he throws him, grabs him by the horns, he throws him down. He pulls out one of his horns and then beats him with it. You know, it's kind of like the modern set where you take off the other guy's shoe and then beat him with his shoe. You know, it's kind of like that. Or the statement can mean, on dying, niritehe, he went to the abode, Shayam, of the Lord. Right? So, because the whole point is Yama, who's Yama? Who's Yama? It's Krishna. Krishna is the potency. He is Dharma and all that. So, he goes to the abode of Yama, means he goes to Krishna's abode. But, at the same time, because he's a demon, and always those who make trouble, one is always quite happy that they, you know, as I said, even the saintly persons are happy when a snake or a scorpion is killed because of their poison and enviousness and just disturbing people that they shouldn't. Right? Does that make sense? Like, how many people that are bitten by a snake, a poisonous snake, then actually were specifically trying to annoy the snake? Right? Not so many. So that's why they're happy, is because they'll just bite anybody that displeases them. So in this way, then when the demons are killed, then one is always happy that that's happening, and you always, you know, they're being bad, so you're very happy that things don't work out so well for them. Right? You know, it doesn't say that the... it's not that Aristasura was killed and St. Peter was waiting there with open arms and with the gates of heaven open, right? No, it doesn't say that. Right? So that would not be very satisfying. Right? So in here it's said in the one way, so emotionally then that's satisfying. At the same time, as we know that from this he goes to the abode of the Lord. So the Krishna and the Brahman feature, then that abode is the Brahmapura, is the Brahmajyoti. Right? Then as Paramatma, then that will be Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? So depending on whether they're remembering Krishna or not. In his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, Aristasura represents the pride of fraudulent religionists whose practices have been concocted by cheaters. through their contaminated condition, they show disrespect to the process of pure devotional service to Krishna. So you see, as those who are proper practitioners, they appreciate the process of devotional service. So if they can see that, that's a proper practitioner. But those who then are opposed to Krishna consciousness, right, opposed to the recommended processes due to pride, then that's what's being discussed here. Even though they themselves may be, you know, quite well-situated religionist or, you know, spiritualist or philosopher, if they don't appreciate this, then this is what we're talking about. So there's a contaminated condition, and they show disrespect. According to the Garga Samhita, in his past life, Aristasura had been a brahmana named Varatantu, who was a disciple of Brihaspati. One day he sat facing his guru with his feet extended towards him. Brihaspati told him, "You sit as a bull sits. Fool, you now become a bull." He then took birth as a bull in East Bengal. Okay, Bengali bull, okay. And by the association of demoniac bulls, he also became a demon. So first he was just a bull, but then he became a demoniac bull. Sukadeva, because when we say where these demoniac bulls come from, because it's mentioned that the demons, then because of just the demigods were so successful in conquering them, they got the satisfaction of having, you know, some place to be where they could, you know, act in their demoniac ways and be the leaders and all that. They would even take birth in the animal species. So then there'd be bulls who then were in that position, would lead the thing, and then they could have their mentality, their, you know, mundane mentality, and you basically leave them alone. Right? Sukadeva Goswami continued, having thus killed the bull demon Arista, he who is a festival for the gopis' eyes entered the cowherd village with Balaram. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The Puranas describe how Radhakund and Shyamakund appeared after the killing of Aristasura as a result of conversation between Radha and Krishna. The innocent gopis said, "Ah, Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of a bull. Alas, even though Arista was a terrible demon, still he was a male cow, so you will have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritrasura. But how can you purify yourself without going to the trouble of visiting every single holy place in the three worlds?" Krishna replied, "Why should I have to wander throughout the entire universe? I will at once bring all the countless pilgrimage places here and take my bath in them. Just watch." With this, Lord Krishna struck his heel on the ground. Then he said, "This is the water of the Bhagavati River coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you, please come here." When the Supreme Lord has spoken these words, all the holy places went there and appeared before him. Krishna then addressed the gopis as follows. "See all the holy places," because they came in their personified form. Because right? Otherwise, how you would know they're there? Right? Yeah. "See all the holy places." But the gopis replied, "We don't see them as you describe." Then those best of holy places, joining their palms in supplication, spoke up, "I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am the Amara Girgika. I am the river Sona. I am the Sindhu. I am the Tamadaparni." Oh, Tamadaparni. That's in, is that the one down in Kerala? Oh, no, it's Tamadaparni.
I don't know.
"I am the holy place Pushkara, I am the river Saraswati, and we are the Godavari, Yamuna and Reva rivers, and the confluence of rivers at Prayag. Just see our waters." After purifying himself by bathing, Lord Hari became quite arrogant and said, "I have produced a pond containing all the various holy places, whereas you gopis must never have executed any religious duties on this earth for the pleasure of Lord Brahma." Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows, right? Because then they just take the mood. They're in that upset thing, and then he does all this, and so then they become pacified. Now he can take that arrogant mood. And it just goes back and forth, because he's taken it, now they'll take it. And so it's just all the nice taste goes on.
This is in Tamil Nadu.
It's in Tamil.
Tamil Nadu.
Oh, Tamil. Okay, so that's on the other side. Okay. Tamalapani. Because you always hear about Tamalapani.
Yeah, it's a very auspicious holy river.
Is that where the two deities go down? The deities go down to take a bath?
It's about that. It is somewhere close to Tirunelveli, you know, which is a divination, one of the divination.
Because there's one set of deities that are... There's one place where all the deities from all the temples come out and they go to that place and take a bath. You know? It's a festival that goes on. Well, wrong crowd. Okay. Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows. I must create an even more beautiful pond, so go to work. Having heard these words, the gopis saw that Aristasura's hooves had dug a shallow ditch just west of Krishna's pond. At that nearby spot, all the gopis began digging up lumps of soft mud with their hands, and in this way a divine pond manifested in the short span of an hour. Krishna was astonished to see the lake they produced. He said, "Go ahead, lotus-eyed one. You and your companions should fill this pond with water for mine." But Radha replied, No. This is impossible, since the water of your pond is contaminated by your terrible sin of killing a cow. Right, so he's taken bath there, but that means all you're purified because the sin goes to that place. Like that. So we don't want that water in our pond, right? I will have my countless gopis, companions, bring the pure water of the Manasa Ganga here in billions of pots. In this way I will fill this lake with my own water, and thus make it renowned, its renown unequaled in the entire world. Lord Krishna then gestured to a heavenly personality who was an intimate associate of all the holy places. Suddenly that person rose up out of Krishna's pond and bowed down to the daughter of Sri Rishabhanu, Radharani. Then with palms joined and tears pouring from his eyes, he began praying to her in devotion. O goddess, even Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories, nor can Lord Shiva or Lakshmi. Only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavor, can understand them. And thus he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you are fatigued. He has always anointed your lotus feet with nectarian charu and yavaka and decorating them with ankle bells. And he rejoices and feels most fortunate simply by satisfying the tips of the toes of your lotus feet. Yavaka is the red?
That's alta.
That's alta. But that's the Sanskrit word? Alta?
Alta is... I've read in Jiva Goswami, so you it should it. Be Sanskrit.
But does he have other words also?
No. I've not heard so far. Okay.
On his order, we have immediately come here to live in this most excellent pond, which he created by one stroke of his heel. But only if you now feel satisfied with us and bestow upon us your merciful glance, will the tree of our desire bear fruit. Hearing this prayer spoken by the representative of the full assembly of holy places, Sri Radha was pleased and said, "So kindly tell me your desire." They then told her plainly, "Our lives would be successful if we could come to your pond. That is the benediction we desire." Glancing at her beloved from the corners of her eyes, the daughter of Rishabhanu replied with a smile, "Please come." Her gopi companions all agreed with her decision and became immersed in the ocean of happiness. Indeed, the beauty of all creatures, both mobile and stationary, was enhanced. Thus gaining the grace of Srimati Radharani, the holy rivers and lakes in Sri Krishna's Kund forcibly broke through its boundary walls and swiftly filled Radha Kund with their waters. Lord Hari then said, "My dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and to enjoy my water pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are." Radha replied, "I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may kill hundreds of Arista demons here. In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is on the spot where you chastise Aristasura, and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me." That night, Lord Krishna initiated a rasa dance at Radha Kund, generating a torrent of the greatest mood of splendorous pleasure. Sri Krishna resembled a cloud, and Srimati Radharani a brilliant flash of lightning, filling the sky with abundant beauty. In this way, their divine glories permeated the expanses of the three worlds.
Even when just now, like when today also we go to Vrindavan, so then we have three dips in Radha Kund, then we go to Shyama Kund, have three dips over there, and just because, and then again we go back to Radha Kund and re-purify ourselves because we have had a dip in Shyama Kund. So is it the proper?
It's just, these are just local customs. I don't know if the Acharyas have said anything specific like that. It's just that one bathes in both. But I'm not sure which one you bathe in first.
First is Radha Kunda, then Sham Kunda, and back again Radha Kunda.
Yeah? Something like that.
That's what local people, we don't know.
Yeah, that's a local custom.
All ISKCON devotees also.
Because the local ISKCON devotees follow what the local Goswamis say. You know, because you have your pundit there and they take you around, and so then they say to do that, and then go up and worship Govardhan in the middle, and then put some money there, you know, the whole thing. Like that. So. You know, it's not a problem. You're taking bath in both of them, so it doesn't matter, really. Does that make sense? So if you're looking at it by getting Radharani's grace, then you can get Krishna's grace, but then at the same time you're taking shelter of Radharani and serving Krishna, however you want to put it together. Mm. Like that. So it doesn't really matter. Yeah? Because I haven't heard about the Goswamis saying something specific. Have you? No? Yeah.
No? Hmm. And some devotees, they say it's very auspicious to take a bath. It's proper mood. And some say, no, we're so full and we shouldn't. Just three drops.
Only three. And if it's four and a half, your head will crack? Or
whatever drops. Just the thumb drops.
So whoever you're with, follow that one. Because if you don't, then it'll be a problem. So if you're with the three drop wallahs, then you go bow down and three drops. Mm-hmm. If you're with the wallahs that bathe, then you bathe. So, the point is the proper attitude, because devotees were going and bathing, and then they started, you know, playing and jumping and just being stupid. So then Prabhupada said, you can't do that at Radha Kund. You know, the ocean, yes, it's Krishna. So there you can do it. But Radha Kund, then, because our mood is that of servant. So then one has to be more careful. So.
And somebody also asked me a question regarding the commentaries of the Acharyas. I would say that they see whatever is going on. But the way that it has been translated, or whatever, has, I don't know, Sanskrit. So they sometimes say that gopis might say and Krishna might say, instead of gopi said, Krishna said. So there, it can happen like this, it can happen in some other way, or it just sometimes happens like this, sometimes happens like that.
Means that these are all the possibilities of things that they could say, because it's unlimited, the pastimes. But then they're referring to, you know, a particular way that the pastime could unfold. So then they'll reveal to us what is something we could appreciate. And so then, you know, because the idea is that if it inspires your Krishna consciousness, then that's a value, and if it doesn't, then it's not. Is that? So that's just what's happening. You know, so it could, because it's unlimited what can happen. So then they'll take one scenario and then explain that. So, you know, because it's always that, are they seeing it? Are they only seeing it? What does it matter to us, technically? You know what I'm saying? But the point is they're revealing how to see. They're our entrance into all this. So that much is, we understand. And then later we'll understand more. But it's not that they can't see that. We wouldn't say, oh, they're not seeing it. Why they wouldn't see it? But that's not the emphasis. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's there, but it's not the emphasis. The emphasis is that on that this is how the pastimes unfold. This is how we can be absorbed. Like this.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.